What's up, everybody? Welcome back to the Keeping Stock Sneaker Podcast. And the NBA is returning. Players are starting to arrive in Orlando in a variety of fashions. Joel Embiid showed up in a hazmat suit. We see that Patrick Beverley is going to be selling polo t-shirts from his hotel, the same hotel Rajon Rondo is calling a Motel 6. We're seeing the dining experience, which is a little less than expected. And we're finally in the era of the bubble basketball season. Interested to see how it plays out, but one of the more fascinating things to occur with this long delay in the NBA season was the recent athlete signing by Converse. I did not know that Shai Gilgeous-Alexander was going to sign with Converse, and I really didn't know he was a sneaker free agent. I knew he was with Nike, but it made me start to think, what does the future of Converse look like, and do they have the power to make a staying play once again? So, in today's episode, we'll look at the history of Converse basketball, how it's evolved, how it plummeted, and what the future looks like. As always, Keeping Stock is uploaded every Sunday on your favorite podcast platform. With that being said, let's get into it. Everyone has owned a pair of Chucks, Chuck Taylors, Converse All-Stars in their lifetime. Whether you bought them or you were given them as a kid, relatively affordable, easy to find, and a traditional fashion staple. However, if we roll back the clock over 100 years ago, Converse had developed a basketball shoe in 1917. Once again, 1917 with these non-skid rubber soles and canvas uppers. They soon then hired Charles Chuck Taylor in 1921. Charles Chuck Taylor was a semi-pro basketball player at the time, to the extent of, I'm not sure what a semi-pro basketball player was in 1921, but he was better than average for the time frame. Chuck Taylor was hired on as a salesman and also provided feedback for what we now know as the Chuck Taylor. The famous ankle patch you see was suggested by Chuck Taylor as a way to protect the ankle from impact. Back then, it was an actual leather patch sewn onto the heels. Now it is the digital printing on the side. And this came from his experience of playing basketball, the perfect person to get feedback from, as signature athletes weren't popular back then. So he put feedback on the shoe and became the first celebrity to endorse a sports model. They then put Chuck Taylor on the road. Chuck goes from hosting various camps, clinics around a variety of states, and then coaches a traveling all-star team. In turn, this shoe spreads like wildfire. There are no other basketball shoe options at this time. He's getting in front of pros, college players, high schoolers, young kids. Everyone sees that that's what he's playing in. That's what they're providing at these camps. And everyone goes out to purchase their pair of Chuck Taylors. And why the name Chuck Taylor? You may have figured out by now, but Converse named it after Charles Taylor for the feedback and the promotion and growth and development of the shoe that Charles put into it. The Chuck Taylor was so revolutionary that it ends up that Charles Chuck Taylor is in the NBA Hall of Fame for his developments on the shoe and how it's pushed basketball to where it is today. The shoe had grown so much from Chuck hosting these camps that its popularity surged and became the official shoe of the Olympics from 1936 to 1968. So for over 32 years. In addition, it was the official training shoe of World War II. So you can see the mass popularity of Converse in this basketball shoe being used on court, turned into a multifaceted trainer for the Olympics in the U.S. Army in World War II. Then, it's the standard in the 1950s. All the pros are playing in it, all college players are playing, anyone who plays high school basketball, or basketball in general, is wearing a pair of Chuck Taylors. Even into the 60s, about 90% of college players and pros were still wearing Chuck Taylors. They essentially had a monopoly on the performance sneaker market at the time. And now that I say that, I don't think it was categorized as performance sneaker back then. It was the sneaker. However, as time goes on, Converse starts to dwindle and some other competitors come into the market. In 1970, they make a giant push with Dr. J and the Pro Leather, advertised as Dr. J makes magic moves in Converse shoes. This Pro Leather once again revolutionized what was being played in, with this leather upshirt a little bit more structure, a bit more flexible for higher impact and the fast break type of basketball that's being played at that time. Because if you compare basketball from 1921 to 1940, a much different game. Then you go from the 40s to the 70s, completely different style of play, the people playing, player sizes, weights, all that is evolving. And so Converse had to evolve as well. And rumor is the last pair of canvas Chuck Taylors, the original model, was worn by Mickey Richardson in 1986. This canvas Chuck model also had some cool accolades to go along with it. Bill Russell won all of his rings in the canvas Chuck Taylor. Wilt put up 100 points on March 2nd of 1962. And Converse created custom Chucks for the first professional all-African-American basketball team, the New York Renaissance, or the Rens. Then as the shoe evolves, Dr. J blows into stardom. Everyone wants the Pro Leathers. Converse continues their hype in 1986 by releasing the Converse Weapon. And this shoe was headlined by two of the greatest of all time. They usually make their way into any debates if you talk long enough. Larry Bird and Magic Johnson. However, you have to remember, at this time, other competitors are entering the market. Adidas or Nike and Air Jordan. However, the Weapon remained dominant. It was headlined, like I said, by Larry Bird, Magic Johnson, highlighted in the commercial by Celtic Kevin McHale, Piston Isaiah Thomas, Maverick Mark Aguirre, Nick Bernard King, and that's who everyone wanted to be. Much as Jordan grew alongside, Converse was still doing very well. I mean, this advertisement, you could say, sold a lot of people.
The Converse Weapon, that's the shoe, that's Magic do what he was born to do.
It may be so, but that's not all. They let Isaiah play like he's 10 feet tall.
For the kind of moves that never fail, the weapon's the choice of Kevin McHale.
The same is true for Mark Aguirre. When I wear weapons, I'm on fire.
Well, what can the weapons do for King?
Well, I can do just about anything.
You already know what you did for me.
What?
I walked away with the MVP.
The Converse Weapon, the number one weapon in the NBA.
Further, the Converse Weapon itself was made of that leather construction and extra padding in the heel. And that was the big selling point. Now we're seeing in today's society different Flyknit and Boost and Air and all of these different materials. Back then, extra padding in the heel did it. Converse then goes on to release the Cons, once again kind of pushed forward by Mark Aguirre and the Bad Boy Pistons. The downside for Converse is starting to happen. They're struggling with sales. Magic and Larry retire. And by 2001, they're starting to file for bankruptcy. And over this process, 2003, Nike swoops in and purchases Converse. Nike understands the history of Converse and what it's done to push the game forward. In some arguments, you could say Nike wouldn't be where it's at today without the innovation in the platform that Converse provided for over 70 years at this time. Once Converse has been acquired in 2003, they signed some athletes from the 2003 draft. And I'm sure the one pick that comes to your head from the 2003 draft is LeBron James. However, the five picks that Converse decided to sign was Chris Bosh, Dwayne Wade, and Kirk Heinrich. The other two picks being Mike Sweetney and Troy Bell, who were the 9th and 16th picks of the 2003 draft. But unfortunately, only one of those players really had the impact that Converse was looking for. Chris Bosh soon went to Nike. Kirk Heinrich had a solid career, just never was the superstar that they were looking for to drive sales. But Dwayne Wade was. They give Dwayne Wade the Wade Converse 1. An iconic basketball shoe in the mid-2000s. It had the mesh gills on the side for breathability. the herringbone outsole, and was touting a variety of new technologies, some falling under the Icon technology that Converse was going after. And so, what's important to remember here is that these five picks were called the first school of basketball. Converse alluding to their first new school of athletes. Five picks. Lucky for them, like I said, Wade does win the NBA Finals in a Finals MVP in the Wade Converse 1. Performs well in the Olympics in his Wade Converse 1 colorway. They even come out with a dual pack highlighting the Wade Converse 1 in a Dr. J Pro Leather. However, Dwayne Wade soon goes over to Nike, goes to Jordan Brand, and by 2012, Converse is no longer in the NBA. They made some very odd signings with Carlos Boozer. They even signed Latrell Sprewell early on. And so from 2012 to 2019, not a single athlete in the NBA is signed to Converse, which is incredible considering for almost 100 years up to that, Converse had been either the official shoe of the NBA or a prominent staying power. Then 2019 rolls around and Converse is making a push again. We've seen a growth from third-party brands or second-party brands outside of the traditional Nike, Adidas, and Under Armour. We saw Li Ning, Anta, we're seeing Puma. And so Converse sees there's market share to gain and enters. Converse then signs as their first athlete, Kelly Oubre Jr., Washington Wizard turned Phoenix Sun, and his off-the-court presence in a social generation is huge. Could be one of the founding fathers of what Instagram goes with League Fits. He has a very unique style and a unique presence. And Converse is now taking a step outside of their box, going from the traditional classic silhouette to more of an outcast original. So they follow in their footsteps and then earlier this year sign Draymond Green, another unique outspoken individual on a very hot team. They may have been down this year, but the Warriors for a while were everyone's team, or it seemed like it. They also have signed a professional Chinese player who was going to come to the NBA draft, but is still currently playing in China in, I apologize if I butcher this name, Abudushu Alamu Abudu Rexitil, also known as Slam. So now they're in the Chinese market. Then they sign Natasha Cloud. And lastly, SGA from the Oklahoma City Thunder. Now they have five signees under Converse. They're acting as originals and somewhat outcast to align with a different subset than what Jordan Brand, Nike, Adidas, Under Armour, etc. are going after. Converse is also becoming very outspoken. They're paying the WNBA salary for 2020 for Natasha Cloud as she focuses on social reform and social justice. They love the way that she's outspoken. They love the way that Draymond's outspoken. They are trying to be originals. And as always, if you follow the Kicks You Wear newsletter, my guy Mike Sykes, that link is down below. He had a great write-up on what's happening on Converse and what they're going for. And Mike is describing them as a counterculture to normal NBA culture. The outsiders. You look at what their platform is going after. It isn't necessarily those who have incredible on-court achievements at this point. I mean, Draymond has a couple finals. Natasha Cloud has a WNBA finals championship, all-time leading assist leader. But Kelly Oubre Jr., not an all-star yet. SGA, not an all-star yet. But they've carved out their own social space to influence different fashion, a younger generation of basketball players that's coming up. And you can see it in those players that are coming up that are focusing not only solely on basketball, but are paying attention to fashion culture, hip hop, social branding, social presence, and creating their own brands. And to me, that's one of the strongest things Converse has done is going after these individuals who already have a very strong personal brand and a strong sense of community. And I think that's where Converse is going to try to move in the future, because at the end of the day, all it takes is one athlete to skyrocket your brand. You look at what Jordan did with Nike. You look at what LeBron and Kobe have done. Dr. J in Converse. T-Mac or Derrick Rose in Adidas. It's those type of athletes that if you catch one on, you put yourself in a positive return situation down the road. And the other thing that SGA came out and said why he signed with Converse was the ability to be himself, be unique, be original, make bold choices that other brands may not allow you to do. And so it's potential that the next kid coming out of college who knows his brand and knows who he wants to be and finds those larger companies aren't aligning with this subset, Converse may be the one. Other huge positive Converse has in its back pocket is it's owned by Nike. That allows those athletes to occasionally have those Nike products or be a part of that family and extended cousin from Jordan Brand. So they have a lot of enticing amenities to come with signing with the brand. And Converse hasn't been shy to give these athletes their own signature models out of the gate. Another thing other brands may not be able to offer. So if they can get that one player and gain that market share, we may see them around for another 70 or 80 years. Or on the other spectrum, this Natasha Cloud signing could be huge. There isn't a single brand that is dominating the women's space purposely. And by that, I mean, I've always been curious to why there isn't many female signature sneakers out any longer, because it's always a Hyperdunk or a Paul George or a LeBron that these players or Kyries that these players are wearing in the WNBA in college. But why not give women their own platform for their own signature sneaker that is specialized to a woman's foot? Because they are inherently different. That may help performance. It may give them more confidence. It may inspire a generation of women below them to continue to play basketball, to get their own signature sneaker, to be on the front page of Slam, to win a WNBA championship. And maybe Converse takes that route as well. We'll see. It's only the beginning. These five signings right now, I guess you could say, are the second school of Converse. And maybe they learn their mistakes from the first time and will push these signings to a bright future. And that's the history of Converse basketball. As always, I hope you guys enjoyed that. I hope you're looking into Converse or maybe go check out their products. Some of them actually caught my eye. Draymond signature, not so much, but some of these more performance models I do enjoy, and maybe I'll look to see if I can get my hands on a pair. I hope you guys enjoyed this episode and learned something, or just took away what Converse could be working towards and what other these smaller brands are working towards. So I thank you for your time. We're going to take a quick break, and then we're going to take a look at some cool content and upcoming sneakers. In terms of cool content, I'm going to stick with that NBA opener that I was rocking with, just to see how interesting this is going to be. I think if they can make it through the first round of games, that we'll see this through to completion with the large amount of people in Orlando crossing paths, being in these small areas and tight spaces, risk of injury with not playing for a little while, to see where this takes us. Because I think as they lose teams or teams dip out, people are becoming more focused, more concentrated on the end goal. And I think this championship may be one of the hardest in recent years. The way I picture it is, imagine training for a marathon and you're 75, 80% of the way done through your training. And then right as you're getting ready to hit that final stretch and run your actual marathon, you take a 4-month pause from no training or competitive atmosphere that you're in, and then you jump right back into it when it matters the most. It's doable? Yes. Difficult? Yes. Full of obstacles? Yes. Uncertainties? Yes. There's a wide variety of something that the NBA has never experienced before. Yes, players are healthy, but you're playing when it matters most against the best players in the world. Getting that rhythm back, these new additions of signing temporary players for this bubble, team chemistry, all of those things is really going to show who's a true coach, a true leader, a true team at the end. I think this may be a representation of who the best team actually is. We won't have to worry about the excuse of injuries or coaches or travel schedules. Everyone's there and everyone's ready to go. So I'm fascinated to see how this NBA season turns out. Now, let's take a look at upcoming sneaker releases for July 12th through July 18th. Really, the highlights of this week's releases is the second half of the Space Hippie collection from Nike, from Recycled and Materials, being the Space Hippie 02 and Vast Grain Volt, Space Hippie 01, Vast Grain Bolt, and Space Hippie 03 in Vast Grain Bolt. These sold out incredibly quick. I think the demand is up there. I think the stock and quantity is much more limited than people were anticipating, because I think this is a very large test for Nike on what path they choose to go down in the future. Making more shoes from these materials, if people want them, is a net benefit for everyone involved. If these came out and they were a flop, they may have to pivot their production ideas and come out with new models. Those come out on July 16th. We also see on July 17th, the Nike ISPA Road Warrior Sale Vault for the very low price of $500. The ISPA, also known as Improvise, Scavenge, Protect, Adapt, has a very unique futuristic architecture to the shoe. But for $500, not a chance. Some will love this. High fashion, definitely. Will catch some eyes for sure. But for $500, and for me, that's a no-go. On the 18th, we then see the Adidas Yeezy Boost 350 V2 Zion for $220. If I'm being honest, this looks like majority of all other 350 Boost V2s that have come out. I'll be passing on that as well. Shout out to SockJig on Twitter and Instagram. They actually just ran a tournament going over the best Yeezy colorways and silhouettes, and it's on my Twitter. You can check it out. But it basically came down to the Wave Runner and Turtle Dove, which I'm happy with. The Turtle Dove ended up winning 53% to 47%. My final I would have picked was the Turtle Dove and the 750. But the Wave Runner is fine. I'm glad the Turtle Dove won. It seems to be on consensus. Once again, the only two Yeezys that I would ever buy. Well, there's three now, I guess. But that all being said, the Zion colorway is coming out on the 18th if you're interested. I appreciate you guys' time. I hope you enjoyed the episode, and I'll catch you next week.